Well, it's good to be here at Ferndale in my yearly fill-in-the-blanks with Pastor Jim and Pastor Peter. But it's always an honor to come and be among friends. So many of you here are familiar to me, and lots of connections, right? Get a hug from Marg this morning. Makes me think of her first husband, Wayne, and doing that funeral. How many years ago, Mark? 14 years ago. And now she's got that handsome man, Stan, sitting beside her. Yeah, you. Yeah, lots of connections, and I do feel at home when I walk in. I want to read a story from Mark's Gospel just to look at for a few minutes this morning. A familiar story to many of you. If you've read your scriptures much, been around church much, you might have heard this story preached on. Mark 5, I'm going to read it from Mark's Gospel. It's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but Mark records it in 5:21. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue rulers named Jairus came there, and seeing Jesus, he fell at his feet and pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." And immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you can ask, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. And then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet and, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." This story got me thinking about connections. And thinking about connections made me think about this picture. I didn't have it digitally to put up on the screen, so I'm just going to walk around and let you see it. This sits on, I took this picture. It's probably one of my favorite pictures I ever took. It sits on our sideboard in our sunroom. I don't know if you can see it or not. See those two ladies in that picture. What do you see about those two ladies? They're from different countries. How do you know they're from different countries? The dress, the color, yeah. One's white, one's black. They're both old. Well, no, the one on the right's not real old. The one on the left was quite old when this picture was taken. Anybody recognize either of those ladies? Yeah. See the connections? There's connections here. So the one on the right, no, the one on the left is my mom. The one on the left is my mom, Doris, and that was taken, I think, back around 2009, and the one on the right is Teresa Malila, and she is she's actually a tribal chief in Malawi, Africa. Now, how does a tribal chief from Malawi, Africa, end up hugging and laughing with my mom in Peterborough, who never lived anywhere else than Peterborough, born and raised in this town? So how do two ladies like that connect? Well, it's a long story, but someday if you want to buy me lunch, I'll tell it to you. But it started 43 years ago when I came when I went to college. And in my first year class was three other guys who all played guitars. And so we started, we just did what you did in the 70s, right? You made a band. They still do that, don't they? And we sang. And the long story is we ended up in Malawi back in 2007 and met this lady, Teresa, and made a profound impact on my life. And when she came here to Canada, she came to visit me. And my mom was still alive, and she met my mom, and they hit it off. And I took that picture of them laughing together. The connections, our stories, and when I read the story, I thought of how our stories are connected in so many ways. And like I said, Matthew, Mark, and Luke all tell the story of this woman who touches the hem of Jesus' garment and receives healing. But all three gospel writers who tell the story connect it with another story. So if you read a version of the Bible that, you know, puts headings above sections of the story, so like the NIV does, all three stories in the NIV have the heading, A Dead Girl and a Sick Woman. So this woman, whose name we don't know, her story, we read her story in the context of another story. So these two stories are connected. Did this unnamed woman and Jairus, did they know each other? We don't know. The more you read the story and think about it, the chances are if they knew each other, it was probably just casually, and even that probably is a remote possibility, because Jairus was a synagogue ruler. This woman had been an outcast in many ways because of her sickness. So the chances of them traveling in the same social circles is slim. But they're connected here. So Jairus comes to Jesus. He seeks him out because he's obviously heard what happens when Jesus shows up. He has a little daughter, 12 years old, who's on death's bed, literally. In fact, if you go on and read the story, she dies before Jesus gets back to Jairus' home. And so he comes seeking Jesus because he desperately wants Jesus to come and lay his hands on his daughter so that she will live. And as they're traveling back to Jairus' home, they go by wherever this woman is. This woman sees the crowd, she hears it's Jesus, and so she presses in. So their stories are connected. If Jairus hadn't come, would this woman have ever come across Jesus? We don't know, but we know that their stories are connected. And in so many ways, our stories are connected. It's fascinating to make those connections, but it's also important for us to remember that our stories are connected. And that got me thinking about the connections in this story. So this woman's connection with Jesus, and to understand what she did and why she did it, we need to understand the condition that she was suffering. And we only know about her condition because she tells us about it. Well, she told Jesus about it. And so the gospel writers record that story. But if she had not shared it, we wouldn't know it. But she shares it. When Jesus stops and calls, you know, who touched me, and she comes, the writers say that she told Jesus the whole truth. She poured it out. All of the hidden story that I'm sure, as we come to understand what this condition was, it was something that she didn't share easily. He shared it probably with those she needed to. But it wasn't something that she advertised or broadcast. And so she tells us by her own testimony that she had been suffering from
an issue of blood. Now, the writers of the gospel stories are all men, right? And so whether through sensitivity or just embarrassment of naming it for what it is, but it 99% chance that this was a menstrual problem. And that for 12 years she had suffered from this menstrual problem that would not stop. And so constantly she was dealing with the weakening of her body because of the loss of blood. And she tells us that it had drained her. It had drained her. It would have drained her physically. Just that constant depletion of the source of life in her body would have weakened her physically. It weakened her in a spiritual sense, because when you go back and read the Old Testament laws, the Levitical laws, then there were restrictions around a woman's public life when she was in her cycle, and it restricted her in many ways from contact with the community and with contact with her spiritual community and the worship community. And for the period of that cycle, she would isolate herself, often in a tent that they would call the red tent. But for her to have this 12-year-long issue with her body, it would have isolated her spiritually from her religious community. It would have put restrictions on her. It would have meant that she was considered unclean, and that anything she touched would have been ceremonially unclean. Can you imagine living that way for 12 years? Of this sense of isolation that would have descended upon her in her daily life. It would have depleted her and diminished her emotionally, her dignity. The fact that she had gone to many doctors, she tells Jesus, I've tried them all. I've gone to everyone who I thought held out some hope for me. And she would have had to pour out her story to those men, probably, and suffer the inquisition of each time of being asked and going through answering the questions that she'd answered before, seeking answers, hoping for an answer that would solve her problem, but never getting it. 12 years of seeking help from the doctors of her day, the physicians, and not getting any help. In fact, she says to Jesus, I got worse. Instead of getting better, I got worse. It drained her financially by her own testimony. It says she'd spent everything she had, all of her resources, all of her liquid cash, and as she liquidated whatever else she had in order to pay for the next hope. And now she says to Jesus, I have nothing. I've spent it all in search of an answer for my problem. And then ultimately it would have sapped her, diminished her hope, right? Because you reach a point, don't you, where you've hoped and you've hoped and you've hoped and you've hoped and you've hoped, and you've been disappointed and disappointed and disappointed, and finally you go to the well one more time and there's no hope left. Have you been there? Have you known somebody who's been there? Maybe you know somebody who's there now. That's where this woman was. And so as we try to understand her condition, we begin to understand why she did what she did. Why she was on the outskirts of this crowd. Why she kept to the edges. Why she thought, if I just kind of sneak in, if I can just touch the edge of his garment without interrupting this procession, if I don't have to confront him and ask him, if I don't have to spill my story out one more time, if I can just unobtrusively sneak a healing, that's what I'll do. And we may think, well, she was just superstitious. She was thinking that there was power in Jesus' clothes. And we can look at that and think, what a superstitious thought or idea. I mean, we are so far from thinking that a person's clothing holds any power, aren't we? Unless you bid millions of dollars for Elvis Presley's shorts. Or unless you're at the U.S. Open tennis tournament this week and Rafael Nadal wins his match and takes off his wristband and throws it into the crowd. And people scramble to catch it. Oh, we're not that far away. And this woman pins her hope, maybe her last hope. She'd reached way down in the well and found a little scrap of hope. And she thought, this Jesus, I've heard some things about what happens when he's around. And maybe I can just reach in. And if I can do it without being noticed, and touch his garment. And she does. She manages to squeeze her way in without people getting upset at her presence there or touching her. And she touches the hem of his garment. And Mark and Luke tell us that when she does it, immediately the bleeding stops. And she senses in her body. I've been trying to wrap my head around what that felt like. To sense in your body that after 12 years, all of a sudden the problem is fixed. Instantly. And she kind of just fades back, right? But then there's this connection between Jesus and the woman. Jesus is on his way to Jairus' house. He's on his way to another situation, a desperate, hopeless situation. But he stops because he senses in his body that power has gone out from him. Not that he's been depleted in any way, but that power has been issued from him. And so he stops, and when he stops, the parade, can you picture it? They're pressing in around him, Mark says. And when he stops, I'm sure it was a little bit like a rear-end collision as people try to all of a sudden realize this parade has halted. And Jesus says, "Who touched me? Who touched my garment?" And the obvious response of the disciples, right? What do you mean? We're surrounded by people who are touching us. All kinds of people are touching you. What do you mean, who touched you? But Jesus did not explain. He just kept looking for the person. Because Jesus wanted to make a connection with whoever it was who had connected with him. And that's an important thought. That the heart of Christ is to connect with people who want to connect with him. That he was not content just to know that someone had touched him and received something. That the healing power that is Jesus. He wasn't content to just let that be enough. Because the power of Christ and the person of Christ cannot be divorced. We try to separate them. But they're one and the same thing. We talk about the power of God. We talk about the power of Jesus. We sing about the power of the blood. But don't ever think that the power is anything other than the person of Jesus. Don't let it become this separate entity that can be experienced and talked about aside from the person of Jesus. Because the power of Jesus is the person of Jesus. Right? And Jesus could have easily have said, I think, when he stopped, "Who touched my person? I felt who I am flow out of me." And so finally, he's looking, and he makes eye contact with her. We're not told exactly what triggered it, but this woman realizes that this parade is going nowhere, and that she is the cause of the stoppage of this parade. And so she comes back through the crowd, and rather than just touching the hem of his garment, she falls at his feet. And she pours out her story. And Jesus does a couple of things. One, he tells her that it was her faith that has made her well. Not some mystical, superstitious connection with a piece of clothing that was his. Not some magical act of making contact with a powerful object. He wanted her to know that the healing that she had sensed in her body and the stoppage of the issue of blood, that was all because she had connected with him. That it was a personal connection. That it wasn't just this nebulous power. It was the person of Jesus Christ. And so he makes a connection with her, and he names sure it was imperfect, and sure it wasn't fully understood, and we might criticize the level of her faith, but Jesus doesn't. He just says, "Your faith has healed you. It's made you whole." That word "healed" means complete. It's the word that our word "salvation" comes from. So he says, "Your faith has saved you. Made you whole. Go in peace." But he does something else, doesn't he? So we have this unnamed woman, isolated from her community and from her faith community, and in so many ways just diminished and shamed. And Jesus names her. He names her. Oh, he doesn't call her Mary or Isabel, or he says, "Daughter." And it's the only time in all of the Gospels we hear Jesus use this word. There are times he addresses Mary as woman or other terms of tender intimacy, but this is the only time that we have recorded where Jesus says to a woman, "Daughter." Now just think about the impact of that on this woman. Daughter. Isn't that a beautiful name? I have two genetic daughters. I love to call them my daughters. I call them all kinds of other things too, but daughter is a beautiful name. And there's only two women in the world who I call that. Because that's what they are to me. And Jesus calls this woman daughter. It's not some nice little tag he puts on her. It's not some euphemism. He's telling her, "You're my daughter." And so the connections in this story. But the most important for us is then to ask, what connection does this story have to my life and to your life? It's a wonderful story, isn't it? But the story needs to make connection with us. We need to make connection with this story. So I'm going to tell you how I've connected with this story. But you have to take this story and make your connections to it. Okay? What time do we end here this morning? 9:30? So maybe we'll have time to hear some connection. But I'll share my connections that I've made with this story. One is, this story reminds me that my story is connected to all the other people I meet in my life. Really. Oh, some are more obvious and some are perhaps more involved than others. You know, I mentioned some of you here this morning I have connection with in the past. There's some of you I've known, you know, for many, many, many years. And our families have been connected, our kids have been connected, right? There's some deep connections. But this story reminds me that my story is connected with every other person I meet in my life. I started a new job this past year, just a part-time job at one of the local funeral homes. And I was working one day shortly after I'd started, and the fella I was working with, name's Daryl, and I'd never met him before in my life, and so we were working together, and so we started doing what you do when you meet somebody and working with them. You start asking questions. At least I do. So we start finding out about each other, and I found out that he grew up in the south end of the city, and he found out that I live in the south end of the city, even though I grew up in the north end and thought the south end was the slums. Now I think it's paradise. Oh, you grew up in the south end. What street do you live in? I said, I live on Cameron Street. Oh, really? Yeah, I said, we bought the house from an older couple that had lived there for like 35 or 40 years. And now we're the older couple that have lived there for 33 years. And Daryl says, oh, I used to live, I forget which, it was one of the streets nearby. I said, yeah, we bought the Lachlan's old house. Tommy Lachlan, he said. He said, I used to play hockey in his backyard. I said, oh, the light's still there. Tommy used to build a rink in the backyard. So all of a sudden, we go from not knowing each other to Daryl used to play hockey in my backyard when he was a kid. But all of our stories are connected in some way. And at the intersection of that connection stands Jesus. It was Jesus that connected this woman and Jairus. Even if they never knew each other beyond this story, their stories connected around Jesus. And your story and my story connects with every other person we meet in our daily life. And at the intersection of that connection stands Jesus. What do I mean? Well, the verse we all learn, if you grew up in Sunday school or been around church much, it's a verse we've all learned by heart, right? For God so loved the world that he... See, you know it, don't you? For God so loved the world, not just me. Not just me, the checkout girl at Loblaws. He, for God so loved her that he gave his only begotten son. And so at the intersection of our lives, when she's checking through my Doritos, stands Jesus. Because Jesus died for me, he came for me, and he came for that girl. And that new Canadian from another part of the world that's war-torn and who has sought refuge here in this country that we love and is our home, and who takes your card at the local gas station, your story is connected with that person. And at the intersection of your story stands Jesus. Why? Because Jesus came for that person, just like he came for you. And when we forget, When we forget that our stories are all connected, we begin to treat other people in ways that grieve the heart of God. Do you hear me this morning? And I didn't intend to come here this morning and get political or social or whatever. I just came to preach Jesus, okay? But what I see on my news each day breaks my heart. And I believe it breaks the heart of God. Because our stories are connected, no matter what the color of our skin, no matter what language we speak, no matter what part of the world we have been born in and grown up in, no matter what religion we've been schooled in, our stories are connected. And this reminds me, Steve, keep that in front of you. Keep it in front of you. And then this story, I connect with this story because in lots of ways I am like this woman. I have been like this woman. I continue to be like her sometimes when what keeps me away from full contact with Jesus is the secrets of my life. Are the things that I keep inside and hidden, the parts about me that I think, well, if God really knew everything about me, he wouldn't want anything to do with me. And we think that we can live around the edges and just sneak in and touch Jesus once in a while and receive the power that we need. This story reminds me that Jesus doesn't want to have that kind of relationship with me. He wants full connection. He wants me to understand that it's not some experience of power that I need from him. I need him. I need Jesus. I need a relationship with him, the person of Christ. And then this story makes connection with me because it reminds me of my name. I don't mean Stephen Kennedy. I mean son. The only earthly people who legitimately could call me son are no longer alive in this world. So mom passed away 7 years ago and dad passed away 12 years ago. But I still am a son. I still hear the name. When I stop to listen, as Paul reminds us, right? That the Spirit bears witness with our spirit that we are the children, we are sons and daughters of God. And when the world that I live in causes me to question who I am, if I stop and wait and listen for the Spirit of Christ to remind me that I am a child of God and that I am a son and you are a daughter, that's the connections I've made with this story. How does this story connect with you today? I'd encourage you to let the Spirit mull it around in your brain this week. Bother you with it. And may it come to mind when you're checking out of the grocery store or when you're sitting at home feeling defeated, discouraged, thinking that you are forgotten. You're not. Amen? Father, thank you for your word today. Help it to sink in. Holy Spirit, do your work now. I've done my best. But you can take this word and you can apply it to each life here and each situation of which I am totally ignorant, but you know intimately. And so I pray that you would use the story of this unnamed woman, this daughter of God, to speak into each life this week in Jesus' name. Amen.